As I sat down to write the intro to this episode of Process Driven, I struggled a little, trying to come up with words that would convey some of my thoughts and feelings about the work of photographer Olga Karlovac. I then realized that the words had already been written by Kochi Hernandez in his beautiful foreword for Olga's latest book, The Disarray. "You're about to embark upon a fantastic journey," he writes. "It's one of boundless time and space, and it's compressed with the pages of the book you now hold. I only wish I could experience again, for the first time, the disarray. Visual poetry is a masterwork. Let me assure you, the signposts on your journey will be stunningly clear and mysteriously opaque, filled with blurry lines, half-made worlds, and the formless. Olga wouldn't have it any other way. Don't be fooled by what you think you see, because dancing within these pages is an unbound energy. An energy that can at once overwhelm the spirit and set eyes ablaze in wonder. You have been warned." That's an excerpt of the foreword from The Disarray. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris, and this is my conversation with Olga Karlovac.
Please listen carefully.
Well, let's dive into some of that, because I remember we talked about it last time, and one of the things that I really enjoyed, and I hope we can kind of go into a little bit, was how you've seen Croatia change as a result of tourism, and, yeah. And how that's affected, you know, not what you shoot, but how you shoot, because there are so many people and it's harder to stay sort of out of you know, not to be noticed.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, Dubrovnik has changed completely. Mm-hmm. Each time I go, it's. I see a different place. It became a product.
Yeah.
Not a nice town, you know. Not a nice town for living. It's, mm-hmm. it's a product that people come to see.
Right.
And it lost, you know, like human substance in mm-hmm. a way.
Now, when did it change for you? How do you remember how old you were when you first saw it?
I think last 10 years it changed rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
With a huge amount of tourists,
right.
In combination with the real estate pricing going up, and you know, many you know, people move out and rent and sell, and the demographic has changed, and the whole character of town has changed. So it's strange. It's a phenomenon that happens in some historic small towns that are attractive just by their architecture, and just tourists gets them. Tourism gets them. You know,
right.
Eats them. It's the substance.
And I remember last time we spoke, you said that it's gotten so bad that people are moving further and further away from the historic districts.
Yeah.
Because the tourists and the Airbnbs and the rentals and things like that are sort of taking over.
Absolutely. You know, it has been a fully populated old town, and it has so much charm because, you know, it had its own school, it had its own, you know, everything. It just lives the same way it lived like 500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing, it was the same until this whole basically tourism industry came. And now people, each time I come, that there is less and less people who actually live there for the whole year. And you know, some souvenir shops, restaurants, and they dominate. They absolutely dominate. I don't think you can really avoid it today, these days, in the system that we live in. But it's unfortunate, I think.
Now, were you photographing before these changes really started to become widespread? And if so, can you see a difference in your own work?
No, not really. I mean, since my shots are maybe 3-4 years old, the mm-hmm. oldest one,
mm-hmm.
and the ones that are not as populated have been made during the winter, because there are still few months during the winter that are not as populated with tourists. But even, for example, this year, I spoke to my friends who work who work in industry, and they said, you know, this year we expect only January to be a bit not as crowded as.
Oh, really? And the rest of the year booked?
Yeah, basically. So we are now left with maybe 1 month, which is where you can feel the solitude in a way of all town. And basically shooting then and shooting during the summer would be completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But most of my shots have been done while this transformation has been in process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How important is it that you recognize where these photographs were taken, or is it intentional that we as viewers don't necessarily recognize where, that they could be anywhere, any city?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not attached or based with my photography to a certain, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not necessarily need to represent a certain city or a certain street. I want to leave freedom to viewer to you know, to feel and to see my work as they want,
right,
and to place them wherever and whenever, however they want. So it's not crucial. But for example, in terms of Dubrovnik, many of my shots do kind of you can on some of them you can sense it's Dubrovnik.
Mm-hmm.
If you have been in Dubrovnik and you see my shots, you can sense it's that place. You can recognize a little bit. So it is that place, but you can also imagine an abstract photograph being anywhere, you know.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily need.
Well, and I think that's one of the really beautiful qualities to your work, is that we can look at it as a viewer and it could be anywhere. It could be Munich, it could be Paris, it could be Dubrovnik, it could be any number of places, because you're capturing more of a mood or a feeling than a literal representation of the place.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that, and that's basic intention. You know, my shots I believe are very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
They are done from based on how I feel at the moment. It's not important where they have been taken.
Right.
They capture a mood and an emotion and freedom in a way for the viewers to imagine whatever they feel, however they want to see the shot. As you say, it can be Paris, it can be anywhere. It doesn't really change the thing that you get from the shot.
Mm-hmm. It's such a recognizable style or body of work. Can you talk a little bit about how that evolved? Did you ever shoot more, literally, I guess? Yeah. Classically, sure. Yeah.
When I started, maybe for a short period of time, I just, but, you know, I captured some regular shots, I would say, you know, like classical ones, just have my camera, and they were also intuitive. They were also, I mean, people said they were good, and they kind of resonated well with the audience. But in time, the way I evolved, I just felt that this style of work really represents how I see everything around me and mm-hmm. how I attach to it, how I feel.
Mm-hmm. And, so you're experiencing the streets, the cities, very similarly to how you're trying to capture them. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. And I always need a little bit of time. You know, I usually, you know, almost all of my shots, I have maybe 2-3 shots that are not from Zagreb or Dubrovnik, but most of my shots are in places that I know.
Mm-hmm.
So usually, mm-hmm. you know, I need a little bit of time to settle and to know the place, to feel the place.
Sure.
And to get the feel of, you know, the streets, the mood, the people, and it kind of gets to me. And then usually my shots represent all of that
mm-hmm.
when I start shooting.
Well, and I think you see that. That's something that's common in, you know, people like Winogrand or Saul Leiter or Daido Moriyama, where they're reshooting and reshooting and reshooting the same places, gaining more and more intimacy with the place.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I reshoot trace, you know, paths, certain paths where I get on the tram and near my flat, and I just you know, drive with it. And especially, you know, if it's rainy, if it's dark, I shoot from behind the windows and in motion and get a different shots, you know, completely, you know, with, you know, different, they vary. Mm-hmm. They really represent a different feeling, and it's nice to compare them even. So I'm definitely, you know, someone who does reshoot certain parts.
Right.
Until I feel I'm completely drained by it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not even reshooting. It's a revisiting, because you're seeing them differently and you're seeing it in different light and from different perspectives, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's revisiting. It's and you know, each time you give yourself freedom, especially after you revisit, you go from a different base point. You just go and shoot, and everything is different. It's just the same path, but everything else is different.
So. Well, and there's such a beautiful spontaneity to your work. Do you know what you're going for when you go out, or do you just let the streets sort of tell you where you need to be?
I let myself go. I never plan. What I want to shoot. I never plan, you know, in advance, you know, like I'm gonna, it's just, I usually, you know, I feel energized to shoot, and I just go out and see what's gonna happen. Usually sometimes, you know, I do get surprised from the result. And you never know. It's very, as I said, you know, it's intuitive. It's just allow yourself a freedom to. You never know what's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm. How often do you go out shooting? Are you shooting pretty regularly?
Well, these days not as much as I would right. like.
Isn't that just the way?
Yeah, I think so.
We never get out as much as we want to.
Yeah, and you know. I love shooting in autumn and during the winter, because I am not that much of a summer shooter.
Same. Same.
Yeah, it's completely different feel. So I hope that when I get all the necessary things done, I'll leave myself a lot more time just for shooting,
right.
Because that's the plan.
You've done two books now, right? Disarray is the second book.
Yeah, I've done one experimental as the first one, but basically I'm not considering that as my book. It was a learning experience. And yeah, these two books, Before Winter and Disarray, are basically my two books that I consider.
Right. I'd like to talk about those for a little bit, if you don't mind. When you decided to put these things together, were you shooting bodies of work to release as a book, or did you look back on your work and go, oh, you know what? This would make a really good book. How did you approach each of the volumes?
Yeah. I would say 95% of shots and in cases, I shoot for the book.
Mm-hmm.
When I decided to do Before Winter, I was shooting for the book. Not necessarily each shot that I make, you know. Sometimes you change a little bit of your approach, and
sure.
you know, it's a process. It took me, I don't know, 6 months to make the shot. So it's, you don't go each time and say I'm shooting for the book, or
sure.
you know.
But the purpose, the underlying purpose is always
the
there.
Underlying purpose is that when I work on something, it's somewhere behind in my head, and I know that I'm working for the book, and I'm basically in this book. I already know the you know, the sentiment of the book, the basic idea of the book, and how I want to present it. But of course, at the same time, during this period, it evolves and it changes. But
sure.
I do have it as an underlying idea.
Are you editing actively? I mean, if something doesn't feel like it fits with the current book project, do you discard it, or do you just sort of pack it away in a different catalog and go back to it later?
I pack it in, I mean, if I don't think it suits what I want in the book, then I just I let it go. But I do still, you know, I still, if I sometimes I really like the shot, but I don't consider it for the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I still use the shot, you know, I can still, this shot is still good one, but it's not part of my book. Or maybe I consider it for some other idea that I have and that I might use, or just I leave it as a shot and it's a nice picture. Usually, you know, with books, I do have a wider selection, of course. And then I during the design process and, you know, I pick shots and you know, things can slightly change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process. I really, I'm taking a long time to make the book. So it really takes a long time for me to do it.
It sounds like you really give yourself the ability to live with those pictures for a while and to see where they fit, not only in the book, but in what sequence they fit in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that I always take a lot of time and lot of effort. And it's important to me. You know, it's not as just, you know, I'm going to pick those 80 shots and put them in the book.
Right.
For me, it's like, this will go here. This is what I want to say in this chapter. This is what I want to say in the second chapter. And this is what it's all about. And it's really like a puzzle that I'm completing.
Mm-hmm. The poems, the written work that you've included in The Disarray, did those come first, or were they written as a response to the photos that ultimately made it into the book?
Most of the writing came later.
Mm-hmm.
As I put the shots together, or as I was putting the shots together, and I had the idea how the book will look, and then I had the general idea of what I want to say with it, and then when most of it was put together, I wrote what I felt was the story of the chapter and how I felt making the part of the book.
Sure. Well, and it's such a wonderful addition to sort of read what you've reflected on as this process has kind of unfolded. It makes it somehow more personal, beyond just titles or descriptions of what the photo is and where it was taken, et cetera, et cetera. There's a different level of sort of intimacy that we get from the written word accompanying the photographs.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, I'm really attached to my books, and I felt that adding a small written, you know, a few sentences were giving a new dimension to the book, and they did make the book more personal. But and I think at the same time, they also, that as you said, that they gave another dimension to the book, which makes it as I think more whole.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you know, they also still give a viewer the freedom for their own ideas, for their own interpretation. For, you know, I think it's I felt it was a part of this book.
So, yes, so but you're not holding our hands. You're still allowing us to sort of read into it what we can, and maybe make it personal to the reader or the viewer.
Yeah, I wanted to do both. You know, I wanted to leave the viewer the freedom, and at the same time to give a certain idea on how this all came together.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does represent in a very symbolic way to me, because I wanted to, as I said, for me it felt like a book as a whole. I'm a reader. I like reading, so I like to see some letters with photography. It's something that I enjoy personally, and I wanted to have it in the book.
some incredible collaborations in this book. Cochi Hernandez writing the foreword Gary Posner composing a piece of music. Can you talk a little bit about how those came about?
Yeah, of course. I mean, both are great guys. With Cochi, he bought my book before winter and from the gallery in London. And when I figured that out, when I found out that he bought it, and he wrote something on my Instagram wall, just
like, out of the blue.
Yeah, that he loved the book, and he wanted me to know that he loved the book, and that you know, it's great.
Mm-hmm. And, now, did you know his work prior to this?
No. I didn't know him. Then I looked at it, and I loved his work.
Yeah.
I of course loved his approach to art, to what he does, how he does it, and the whole package. Really, you know, I thought, you know, he's a great guy, and when I finished my Disarray book, I was thinking, you know, he would be perfect guy to write something about this. I sent him a polite email, and you know, he said yes. He loved my work, and you know, it's been an honor for me to have him in the book. And he worked a beautiful article. He really, I think, got deep in my work, and he, as I said, he really felt for it. And
yeah,
he
it's a lovely forward. It really is.
It really works beautifully with the book, and I'm so happy. He's, you know, it makes. I'm very sensitive about my books, and you know, his foreword, I think, makes this book even better, and that's something that is not easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really grateful he did it, and with Gary. He's a lovely composer, and he saw my work in London in a gallery, and I was not there. I already went back to Zagreb, and he was so inspired. He ran back home, and he started playing his piano.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. And he wrote a piece, not for the Disarray. He wrote a piece for Before Winter.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent it to a gallerist in London, and Eugene, you know, my friend who whom I work in London mm-hmm. a lot. And then Eugene sent the email to me with this piece.
And what did you think?
I was, you know, so amazed, and I couldn't believe, you know, someone saw my work and wrote something that, you know,
as response, chills. How wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy story. And, I answered him, and, we met, and,
Did he come there, or did you go back to London?
When I came back to London, a few months after, for another show, we decided to meet, of course, you know, and when we met, you know, we started speaking, and, you know, we connected really well. And we decided to, you know, to do more together. And then when I finished my draft for the book, he wrote another piece, the Disarray. And, you know, I loved the piece, and I decided to put it in the book as well as, mm-hmm. as something that that really reflects the mood of the book. So with Cochi and with him, I think it's a great package. You know?
It is. It very much is. Yeah. Now, are you listening to? Are there musics types of music that you listen to while you shoot that help you kind of get in that frame of mind or get in that mood that you're trying to capture, or does that come after the fact?
I always shoot. Or 99% of the time I shoot alone, and I don't put anything to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I just I prefer just hearing noises from around me.
Just the sound of the streets kind of thing.
Yeah. That's the kind of it gives me a better sense of what is happening, in a way, of being a part of it, being attached to it. So I'm not one of those who listens a lot of music while shooting. I prefer the other way around.
I don't shoot a lot, but I find I'm the same way. I find listening to music, it can be distracting.
Yeah.
And in some cases, even disorienting.
Yeah, I agree completely. For me, it's the same. I mean, and also, you know, while you're shooting, you're kind of very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You are, your senses are working, and as you say, you know, it's kind of a distraction if you hear something different in your ears that doesn't. So I'm more preferring the other way, and and it drains me a lot as well. So you know, when I shoot for like 2-3 hours, most. But even I sometimes I choose just for an hour. When I came back home, when I come back, I'm really really tired.
Yeah,
I don't shoot for a long time. Basically, sometimes just an hour or 2 hours, and that's even a lot.
When you're going through images, is post processing a big part of your workflow? Or is it something that you have, and I don't want to know how you do things?
Well, it's not a problem for me to elaborate more. I know many, you know, I get people ask a lot.
How do you do it? What lens are you using? Yeah.
Yeah, I work with Ricoh HR and HR2. In a post-processing, as I shoot a lot from behind blurry windows, in motion, I use reflections. In post-production, I never change images in terms of, I never delete anything, I never add anything. They are just the way they are made. What I do is I crop them, you know, drag them sometimes a little bit, just contrast them a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's about what I do. But they are, it's for me personally, I mean, I don't mind people doing whatever they want
sure.
with their shots. But for me, it's important that, for example, I always keep things the way they are. You know, I don't want to change the settings. I don't want to delete anything, or I don't want to add things there, you know, because they represent the moment that happened.
Mm-hmm. When did that moment, when did you know that this was a style that you wanted to continue to explore? Was there a specific photo or a specific body of work when you changed from what you know, more classical shooting to this current, almost impressionistic style, if that's fair?
Yeah, yeah.
Was there a singular photo or a specific body of work where you went, aha, that's what I want to explore?
Well, not really. I don't even remember, to be honest. But what I do remember and know is that I wanted to give myself more freedom with intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you just shoot... while walking, while running, from behind things, you know, and you know, with classical way, you kind of prepare more, and you know, you take you. It just came to me.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, I think, fair, and it felt natural to me
to sort of let go of those constraints.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was the main issue. I don't care. I mean, I don't even care if you call it photography or not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't care. I just do it the way I want to do it. But you know, for me, it's not as important. Sometimes, you know, I don't even care if people see that as a photography in a way. It's more how they feel when they see it. It's
sure.
about what they see.
Sure.
It's not about what it is, how it's done, you know, in terms of course, it's photography. And of course, I'll tell everyone how I do it. And of course, it's done with a camera. Of course, it's done the way that it preserves a moment, the way it has happened. which of course it's important to me. So it makes it a photography undoubtedly and right, unquestionably. Right. But deep down, it's not about that for me. That's what I wanted to say. You know, deep down, it's about just presenting something that how I capture moments and how I feel. And I want people to be free to interpret that as they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost, some of the work is almost, you know, when you see something dramatic and you blink or you close your eyes and you're left with that sort of after image on the underside of your eyelids where you can just for a moment see what you had just looked at, but your eyes are closed. That's, I know I'm probably not describing it well, but that's how I see some of your work, where it's the after image of a moment that, yeah. that it doesn't have to be literal. It doesn't have to be classical, as we've said, but there is an impression. There is a, some sort of emotional connection to what you're shooting.
Yeah, and I would say it's something, I agree with you, because I think it's something that stays with you. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that I really, you know, it steers your imagination. It, when you, as you say, when you close your eyes, there is something left with it, and it's your interpretation. It's the substance that you took out of it, that you take with it and carry, and it can inspire you if you want. It can, you know, and that's, I think, what art should be about. I mean,
sure.
it's not about technique. And you know, many of the photographers that I love shoot completely different than what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are like very classical, very completely different. It's not how you do it. It's what you, how you make people, what, how it affects you.
Yeah, yeah. How do you see your work changing from before winter to the disarray? Are you able to see a change that maybe we as a viewer can't see, or are there things that are so dramatic that to you they're very obvious?
Well, to me, it's a kind of continuation, mm-hmm. from one book to the other, and I think Before Winter has much more contrast. Also, is not necessarily as it's more revealing, I would say.
How so?
It's a bit less blurry. It's a bit more. I think the disarray is a bit more. It's a good question. I mean, now I'm thinking about it. I think it's Before Winter, as I said, has more contrast. It's more in a polarity. It's more black and white. It's more, and the disarray has more shapes. It mm-hmm. has more grayness. It has. It's also in concept. Before Winter has an interview going through the book. Disarray has short patches of writing. Which gives a different perspective to the book. I think there is more blur in the disarray than in Before Winter also. Mm-hmm.
And was that intentional, or is that something that just sort of evolved?
It evolved, but also when picking the shots and when thinking about how it should be, I felt that the disarray is, as I said, a continuation, but... at the same time, it was intentional to do it that way. Well, it's hard to explain. There are questions that, you know, you start asking yourself then, because they are obviously good questions. And comparing those two books, now I'm answering some questions to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I never thought about it.
Yeah,
I know it was a continuation. I know that it's less contrast, more it's more in shades, it's more grayish, it's not so black and white. Also, there is a patch in the book which is not made in street, which is made, you know, with my portrait and some shots from my window, which gives a different addition to my work. And also it's more, I would say, introverted than the parts when you just go on streets and just shoot other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is definitely, I would say, some step forward from Before Winter, as I don't have this part there.
Yeah. Is there an act three? Is there a continuation of Disarray where you can see the work changing even further and going in a different direction that you'll release as another book?
Well, I in my mind, you know, when I made Before Winter, I wanted to do during, not when I first started, but when I was in the process of making it, I was thinking about making a trilogy. And the first one should be Before Winter, the second one should be The Disarray, and the third one should be Escape. It's like the final book, the end resort of this kind of journey.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm not shooting for it. I started and I had some ideas, but I'm completely, you know, overwhelmed with other things. So currently I'm not working on it.
Right.
I put it aside and I'll see what the time brings. But, you know, hopefully one day I would want to finish the whole mm-hmm. project.
It's interesting to go from The Disarray to Escape. What does Escape refer to for you? Or what did it refer to when you came up with it?
Well, I simply, you know, and in that process, first when I was doing Before Winter, when I was like finishing the book, I got the idea for the title of the next one, and which is The Disarray. And then when I was finishing while I was working on a Disarray, I wanted to make a chapter in The Disarray, which would be called Escape.
Mm.
And then I said to myself, no, you know, it didn't feel right.
To just include it as a chapter?
Yeah. It didn't feel right. And I didn't feel even ready to work on it, to do it. I was thinking about it as a chapter because I had some shots.
Mm.
And
that didn't really fit with The Disarray as a theme.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And it was kind of, you know, I could have done it and put another 20 pages maybe, you know, but it didn't feel with the sensibility of the book.
May have felt tacked on.
Yeah. And I struggled a lot with The Disarray, and you know, I was somehow in between thoughts. Whether, you know, I didn't want to finish that book, and on the same, I didn't feel it was finished, and at the same time, I had some ideas that didn't fit in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, and it's a kind of continuation of how things went on after The Disarray. You know,
right.
It's kind of escape from it in a way, you know.
So you're escaping from those feelings in The Disarray.
Yeah,
escaping
in
from
a way.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You are. So it should have a different. The book should give a different feel.
Right. Almost a resolution.
Yeah. But it's far from even being. It's not going to happen for a few years, I think.
But isn't that great, though? I mean, isn't it? It this work. I think there's such a pressure to turn out new work that going the other way and giving yourself the opportunity and the space to work through something until it feels right. It's got to feel right to you. It's got to feel like it's ready to sort of be put out into the world, not just, oh, I made a second book, now I have to make a third one because it's a new
absolutely.
Year or whatever.
Yeah. I don't want to do it that way.
Yeah.
I absolutely don't want to do it that way. And I don't have to, I told to myself a while ago, you know, I'm doing books for me,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have to publish any more books at all. I don't care. Each book I did it for me. And even if they didn't sell, even if I never had success, it doesn't, you know, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate it and I enjoy it. But, you know, to make the next book just because I sold the Disarray would be
right.
wrong.
Yeah, the Disarray sold out, so there must be a demand for another book, so I'm going to make another book.
So it's not going to happen that way, you know. I didn't sell it out, but I'm not... It will not be the reason for making a new book.
Good.
So you're right.
Good.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about printing?
Yeah, sure.
How do you print a lot of your work? And if so, what sizes? How do you decide what size things look good? Because I would imagine there's a different impact that your work has to us as a viewer, depending on what size we see it.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, for me, it's even difficult to decide the size of the shot in the book, mm-hmm. let alone if I have to print it for the wall. That's almost, you know, that's crazy. Because
right.
you never know. It's so difficult to figure out up front how the image will look in which size. Some look great big, some look great small, some look better, I don't know, some medium size.
Mm-hmm. How big are the pictures that you posted on Instagram recently, the ones that are going to New York? How big are those?
They're in a frame that is about 90-60, I think, centimeters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I made four different sizes. There will be about 15 prints, and I made many different sizes. I made small ones, which I believe are well presented as about, I don't know, 25 centimeters,
mm-hmm.
which are quite small, up to almost a meter, which were
that's a big
the
print.
Biggest. Yeah, 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 and there is a. There are some sizes in between, and you never know.
Do you tend to prefer your work larger or smaller? And does your gallerist in New York agree with you in the same way? Or is there a difference of opinion there?
Well, mostly, they were pleased with my choice. I made the choice this time, mm-hmm. the final choice. Well, you always have some disagreements in terms of what do you prefer and how you want to curate things. But generally, you know, I made one print of a shot, in whatever size, I can imagine how this shot will look in bigger or smaller. But mm-hmm. before making shot. In printing the shot at all, I can't say that I can be wrong. You know, sometimes
right.
I think, you know, this will look great big, I love it big, and then we make big and then I hate it.
That didn't work at all.
No, Olga, you stupid one.
Now Olga, the all important question, glossy or matte? Where do you come down?
Matte.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. There's something about matte paper, isn't there? I love just flat prints.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but there is something absolutely lovely. And I would imagine that your work looks stunning on matte paper.
I have a great printer here in Zagreb and we work a lot together. He suggested the paper and the ink, which is different as well.
Mm-hmm.
When you do a matte paper, you have a special ink for the matte paper. And I'm pleased how it looks. And I will continue the same way.
Did they print the book for you as well? Because the printing of the book is really lovely. I mean, those choices that you made, both in layout and paper weight and paper type, really lovely.
It's a different mm-hmm. producer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with printing prints, it's digital, but with books, it's offset printing.
Yeah.
So it's completely different plant. You know, it's a different company. It's a different preparation. You prepare it. It's printed in duotone, and it's something completely different. And I mean, I didn't know how it would turn out until the last moment. And I spent two nights at the printing company
mm-hmm.
in their production, trying to do the most from it because we had so many issues. With offset printing because as you saw probably this array is very it's full of shades,
yes,
full of tones,
yes,
and I didn't know that, you know, with my Before Winter book it's a lot of contrast which requires a bit different preparation.
Mm-hmm.
And with all these shades, with this array, we needed a different preparation. And also, it was very difficult to print it, not to lose all the tones, at least here in Croatia, where I work with a little bit of money.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know that going in, that it was going to require a different preparation? No. Oh.
No. We learned as time progressed.
Mm-hmm.
We did some prep prints and the guy who was a graphic editor helped and recognized problems. And then we were changing things. And also during the final production, I was there to do some, we changed things in the process by sheets. We needed to look sheet by sheet. And it was the best we could do at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
with the money and with the people, and you know, we all did our best. But you know, it's not easy. I did it by myself, so you know, that was my decision, to be honest. But it's not easy. I learned a lot.
Right.
It's not easy to produce that type of a photo book.
Mm-hmm. How has the book been received overall? Have you been surprised at some of the responses that people have had to the work?
It varies a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It varies a lot. I get a lot of people get inspired. They say that it inspires them to do work, to do their own photography. To
mm-hmm.
They feel very emotionally after looking at it.
Yeah,
they can,
I can
connect
see that.
With it. Yeah, and they can feel the work. Often the, it they get their own, I would say, they interpret the work their own way.
Mm-hmm.
They see it their own way. Often what they see is not what I see, it's not what you see, and that's the beauty, you know.
Right, right.
We all see something and we see differently and we feel differently. But what most of them say is that when they look at my work, they inspire to explore, to feel. It's, they say it's quite strong in terms of emotional impact.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they usually say. That, but what I see, well, I see myself.
Really? How do you mean?
It brings me back each time. You know, I see some picture. I remembered how I felt when. I mean, not necessarily each and every time, but
sure.
You know, especially, you know, when I look the book and see a chapter, you remember when you took the shot, you remember the feeling, the smell, the some details. Something comes back from your memory, and it's the details. It's very fragmented, but you know, and that's what I, for me, it's a reflection to something. It's something that stays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each time I look at some shot, I can go back to certain moment in a way that in other way would be kind of lost.
Are those moments getting harder to capture with so many people now in the cities? Are the moments of solitude getting further and fewer between?
Well, that's true. That's true. It's, they're more difficult when with many people, but then sometimes I tend to shoot crowded streets,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the feel of having so many people, and some of the shots in the disarray are with lots of people in Dubrovnik. So that's kind of interesting because it's a different feel. It's a feel of you know, thousands of faceless people in a way, just rushing somewhere, and also feel of emptiness in a way at the same time, even though you have so many people.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I actually really love about the work, is that there is that feeling of being alone in a crowd, or alone in a crowded room where the world is moving by you, the people, sounds, hustle, bustle, moving by you. And on some level, it is just a blur. It is happening so fast that it is just a blur. But here we are, through your photographs, here we are at the center of that. Yes, it's a solitary feeling, but it's also comforting in a weird way because you feel surrounded by that crowd.
I agree in many ways. And it is that constant play with attachment and detachment together, because there is, of course, attachment and there is a connection, but at the same time, it's so in so detaching way.
Yeah.
And it's nice to, you know, it evokes then many feelings and thoughts, and it leaves you a lot of space to explore.
Yeah, that I think that's a great way to say it. And, you know, one of the other things is that your point of view comes through so strongly. Your sort of unique way of seeing the world around you comes through so strongly. And I think it would regardless of how you shoot, because it is such a strong way of seeing.
Yeah, well, thank you for the big compliment. As I said, I have no problems in revealing, and that kind of resonates well with it. And I encourage people to always develop their own style, we are all unique in the way we see things.
Sure.
And I think it's much better to be yourself and develop whatever it is, however it is, you know, it doesn't matter. It's only you and the world you see around, and how you interpret it, what you make out of it. And, you know, the worst thing is to copy. The best thing is to be who you are.
If you'd like to see some of Olga's work or pick up a copy of her latest book, The Disarray, head over to her website at olga-karlovac-photography.com. That's olga-karlovac-photography.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at olga.karlovac. There are still a few copies of her previous book, Before Winter, available through the ECAD Gallery in London, and that's ECAD.photography. Subscribe to Process Driven in your favorite podcast app. Or if you'd like to get every episode of Process Driven, along with iterations in between and special one-off conversations all in one feed, subscribe to Jeffrey Sidoris Everything. If you're enjoying Process Driven, help others find the show by leaving a review or a rating on iTunes or by sharing it on your social media. You can connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Jeffrey Sidoris. That's JeffreySadoris. Or on my website at jeffreysidoris.com. You can also email me at talkback@jeffreysidoris.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I appreciate your time, and I'll talk to you on the next one.